lightning in his hand and steel in his eyes. His trigger finger never hesitates. A lone figure in the dust, quicker than a shadow, deadlier than a storm. He lives by the bullet, where every showdown could be his last, but it never is. His legend is written in gunpowder and blood, every shot echoing through history. In a world where a heartbeat can cost you everything, he's always a step ahead of death. DJ Outlaw.
Good morning and welcome to the studio. I'm here with DJ or Chaplain John Shelton, and happy Halloween to you, sir.
Hey, happy Halloween. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So we were talking about a question of the day earlier, and what's your favorite Halloween movie?
I mean, I'm trying to think of some sort of like cowboy Halloween movie now that I hear your intro by Richard Graves. That is an outstanding, and man, I'm going to miss that guy when he heads out. He's retiring, heading back to the States not too long from now. He's such a fixture here in Sigonella. I would say probably, Sleepy Hollow, that old movie with Johnny Depp.
Okay, that's a good one. Headless Horseman?
Yeah, that one, or maybe Hocus Pocus from my childhood, you know?
And you can't go wrong with those old-timey Halloween movies.
Yeah, how about you? What was your answer?
I'm probably just going to roll with Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, man. Classic. Okay.
All right. We have more coming up with you on Minimalism next. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the studio. I'm here with Chaplain, and we're talking about all things minimalism.
Hey there, brother. So DJ Criminal, got you. It's really good to be here. So we talked about this, with DJ EJ just a few weeks ago, and we got some good feedback, and there's a lot of questions we weren't able to answer. And since I'm prone to talking a lot about this particular topic, I'm setting a timer. So we're talking about minimalism, which is the, I guess, practice of minimizing things in your life for the right reasons. The reason I wanted to do a part two is because there's some unfinished questions and also some interesting conceptions about it. Some people think, hey, if I'm a minimalist, it means I can't own anything and I have to live in one of those modern art museum style houses that has nothing on the walls and it's just barren and bland, but I'll be happy because I'll have my cup of cha tea and, you know, I'll be good to go. And that's not the spirit of minimalism. And so I'd like to start out by mentioning just a few things. I think during this handful of segments, we'll talk about what are the benefits of minimizing the items in your life, the things that you don't need or you don't want, things like that? And are there any benefits in terms of health benefits, statistics, like mental health, things like that? And maybe some techniques on how to actually accomplish it. So maybe a first question is, like, how do you know which things to keep and which things to get rid of? There's a really great book by Marie Kondo, and she basically looks into this idea of, why don't you just keep the things that bring you joy? Like if you look at something in your house that you don't actually need and two, that you don't use, and then you ask yourself, does this make me happy? Am I glad that I have this? There's actually a really interesting rule. It's called the spontaneous combustion rule. And it basically means like, hey, if this item were to just spontaneously combust and disappear, would I be really sad about it? Would I go out and immediately want to replace it? Or I'd be like, oh no, I don't want to do that. You know, I had a time in my life where I had a storage facility, which, by the way, like 1 in 10 Americans have storage facilities. And it's actually, there's more, just 5 times more storage facilities than there are Starbucks in America. And yeah, and the vast majority of storage facilities are not accessed on a regular basis. Usually it's only like Christmas or something like that. And the Christmas supplies usually only make up 10% of the actual contents. And so people are paying $90, $100, $200 a month on this thing that they're not really using. But I was using a storage facility, and I remember I had to move. I was joining the military, and I was like, oh my goodness, the weight limit is like, what, 9,000 pounds or something. I had, I think, 20,000 pounds of stuff. Yeah, I can see, yes, if anybody's not in the studio right now, that like DJ Criminal's jaw just dropped to the ground. Yeah, so I ended up getting rid of about 10,000 pounds of stuff. And there's all sorts of ways to get rid of it. You can organize it and sell it. You can donate some. I was so stressed out about it, I literally just threw it all away. I know that sounds horrible. It is wasteful. But that's what happens when you allow yourself to get to that level. Because I was getting to the level where, wow, when I'm like 30, 40 years older than I am now, I might become like a hoarder. I got to get rid of this problem. And so a lot of the stuff was really just junk. I probably could have gotten a couple $1,000s for it if I had spent 10 weeks organizing it and selling it, but that would have been 10 weeks of horrible experience for me. So basically, the spontaneous combustion rule says, if you don't really care about it, get rid of it. And guess what? As I look back at it, all that stuff that I got rid of, I can't remember anything, and except one thing. I remember there was an electric guitar that had a broken like pickup, which would have taken like $50 to fix, and it was probably only worth $75, the guitar itself. And that's the only thing I even remember, and I don't miss it. I don't remember really any of the things, which is so surprising. I've ended up decluttering several times in my military career, and each time I do it, months later, a year later, I don't remember any of the things I don't have. It's really fascinating how much stuff we can accumulate, I've accumulated, and that we can accumulate, and we don't really need, which is so interesting, right? Like, do you have any things you've ever thought to get rid of?
Oh, yeah. So when I first PCS'd over here, we had a lot of things in storage ourselves. And before the movers came and picked it up out of our storage unit, like you're talking about, everybody seems to have one. We went through and probably got rid of a third of everything we had in the unit, just because we were like, do we need this? Do we want to take this with us to Italy? It's like, No, it's going to be a hassle.
Everything
and it just kind of clutters
that you
things.
Have like that is a little bit of a mental weight that you're carrying a thing. It's like, there's this other rule called the 20-20 rule. And it's sort of like, maybe you could call it the just in case rule. It's like, oh, well, here I have this strange, you know, hookah in case I have some guests who want to smoke a hookah. Or here I have, you know, a peculiar coffee set that makes coffee for 30 people. Just in case. It's like, wait a second. How often are you going to use this? And couldn't you just like use a bunch of Nespresso or something on that one occasion, or order Starbucks or something like that? So, yeah, it's interesting. It's difficult. We'll get back to more of that in the coming segments.
Okay, stay tuned for more. You're listening to 105.9 AFN The Eagle. Welcome back to the studio. I'm here with Chaps, and I've got a question for you, sir. Mm-hmm. How did you get so much stuff?
Yeah, my last story was like, yeah, I had a lot of things. So I started off, I'll try to phrase this in a way that's very respectful to my dad, who is amazing, a wonderful person. But he grew up super poor. And he, you know, worked hard. He enlisted in the army, Vietnam vet, and you know, then he ended up getting a good career after he got out of the military, and you know, made great money. And it's the first time in his life he had money. And so he had never learned what it was to have to organize possessions, because he never had many of them. And once he had the means to get things, and he was just a great dad, and he loved to, you know, like do all sorts of fun stuff and play games all the time, and you know, really great guy, super smart. But he also loved tools. He had a hobby. He loved tools. He loved making things, loved fixing things. And I remember we were driving. This is in Jacksonville, North Carolina, by Camp Lejeune. And I was a kid. I was maybe 10 years old, 9 years old. And we were driving, my brother, my dad, and I, down the street. And there was an Ace Hardware store. And it was going out of business. And my dad was like, let's check that out. So we walk in for the going out of business sale. And everything is like 80% off, 70, 80, like really nice tools. And we're like, wow, Dad, if you want to buy a bunch of tools, you know, because you don't need any, because you already have two of everything in here, you could just buy some tools, and Zach and I, you know, my brother and I, we could sell them on eBay, and it would teach us business practices and stewardship, and you know, we could make some money, and we'd give you part of the profits and all this stuff. And he's like, that's a great idea, kids. And so he walks over to the manager. He's like, hey, how much for the rest of the store? And he buys like the, it's it, like given like 70% of the store was already gone, but still, this is a ton of tools. And so he bought all these tools, and we organized them all in the garage, how we were going to ship them, how we were going to sell them. And guess what? We never sold any of them.
Oh, my gosh. Your dad still probably has them.
He still has quite a lot of tools. So, oh, goodness, I feel kind of guilty about it, actually. There's this movie where, was it Contact with Jodie Foster, where she's trying to get to space, and this, you know, government space program builds this, like, dimensional warp machine, and it breaks. And she goes to this super famous wealthy guy, and she's like, "What do I do now?" And he's like, "Oh, well, no problem, because you know the government has this policy, and the policy is why buy one when you could buy two for twice the price." And they had bought a second one, and that's kind of how my philosophy was growing up. The other thing was, I was a hospice chaplain for some time. You know, as I got older, I tried to get rid of stuff and try to be organized. Always so tough to be organized with all the possessions that I had. By the way, a lot of people, side note statistically, once you own a certain number of items, it's almost impossible for an average person to be organized or tidy. And by the way, the vast majority of people who are organized and tidy don't own many possessions by comparison. So a lot of organization has to do with how easy is it to organize, or is it a huge chore to get anything out because you have to move 20 things to get it out. But the other aspect of minimalism in my life is I was highly affected by being in the hospice field. I was a hospice chaplain, and you know, go visit people in their last weeks of life and meet a lot of really interesting and amazing people, a lot of war veterans. But there are a couple of people that I visited who, and they were the sweetest people, but they were hoarders. And it's like, how did this happen? And it's like a slow accrual of stuff and a love for stuff and an investment in stuff and not an investment in people, not an investment in experiences. It's an investment in, hey, my value is based on what I have. And that's a really dangerous road to go down. So that's kind of how I got really interested in minimalism. And then I had and that brings us, I guess, to a question, how do you, what are the benefits? There's something you were going to like mention there.
Yeah. So I'm kind of wondering, you said a lot of these older people had a lot of stuff too. So before I enlisted, my friends and I, we had a moving company out of Southern Utah. Oh, wow. And we would notice that too. Like you'd get these older men and women inside of these homes or whatever. And sometimes they'd pass away and their kids would hire us. And they're like, "Hey, we want you to come and pick up all this stuff. And we're going to move it into a storage unit or something like that." And some of these people had just more things than you could possibly imagine. And some of it, like, why would a person have this? It's just random knickknacks. But
wow. And like, you could never use them all. And if you were to ask the person, "Does this shoebox filled with figurines from 1920 make you happy?" It's like, "Oh, I actually forgot I had that like 20 years ago." Like the vast majority of things, it's like, why do you have this? It's like, "Oh, it's just in case," or, "Hey, maybe it'll be worth money sometime," or a lot of reasons that are actually causing you a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety.
And going along the stress and anxiety things, how does minimalism help mental health?
Yeah, so this is there's tons of research coming out on, I guess, minimalism has become a hot topic word because during the pandemic, people who had overly minimalized their possessions found that, like, "Hey, I really wish I had that set of Monopoly that we threw away, or that Connect Four, or I really wish we had that that nice thing for this hobby that I was getting into, because now I can't go outside." Like, yeah, so there are things like that. It's like important to only get rid of the things that you really don't want or don't need. However, they've found that when you do get rid of things, the types of benefits are amazing. For example, a study that UCLA put together found that women who described their homes as cluttered had substantially elevated levels of cortisol, which is a stress and fat storing hormone. So like a question you might ask yourself is, how does the current state of my environment affect my mental well-being, right? Second study by Princeton University found that physical clutter can significantly impair your ability to focus. And they found that people who lived in clean environments, tidy environments, were better able to pass tests, to study. They found that they had more time to do things that they enjoyed, like playing video games or visiting friends or having an extra cup of coffee while taking a walk or something like that. All sorts of really fascinating studies coming out about your mental clarity, about focus, about this this closure loop that your brain goes through, about all the things that you have that are sort of like, "I need to do." When you have a clear environment, it's much easier to actually close the loop on some of those mental circuits, and it reduces your brain focus on things that don't actually matter, which is really nice.
Okay, and to kind of put that in another perspective, for someone that's computer savvy, like, would you compare that to having like a bunch of tabs open on a browser where it slows down your RAM speed?
Oh, interesting. That's a great analogy. Yeah, like you have a ton of tabs open, some programs open. It's like, oh, I have this open because I don't want to lose my spot on this, you know, show or this YouTube video or this, you know, this article, and I want to highlight this instead of just organizing it, you know, taking a snapshot or whatever it might be. And by the way, that might be a good topic for next segment, is like good tips to start minimalizing.
Okay. Stay tuned, because we have more for you on how to help your mental health with minimalism and the benefits of it next. Welcome back to the studio. We're here with Chaps and all things minimalism. So I've got a question on, how do you balance living a more minimal lifestyle when you live with other people?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And a question that can make people angry. You're such a vagabond, DJ Lawless. So I guess two things to think about. One, I had a buddy who was married, and his wife was really into minimalism. And he was kind of like me, had a ton of stuff, wasn't super organized. And you would think that that would cause the two to butt heads. However, this woman had read a book by Marie Kondo called The Joy of Tidying Up. By the way, which I've read like three times. I listen to it on audio when I'm PCSing, as I'm cleaning. It's like my motivation. Or I'll listen to like minimalism podcasts or whatever. But So Kondo points out this thing, and this woman actually did this very thing in her marriage. She just selected her spaces, and she made an agreement with her husband. Hey, let's select spaces in the house that belong to either of us. Like, I'll be responsible for this space, and you can have this space, this space, this space. And so she had her spaces, he had these spaces, and he could have all of his stuff and his, you know, little accoutrements and his collections and his whatever and books and stuff. And she really minimized her life. And now she wasn't like a bare bones minimalist like we've talked about previously, but, you know, she really had a super organized way of doing things. And she always seemed to have everything. She knew exactly where everything was. Everything she had, she took great joy in having it. And she never had clutter. She never stripped everything, and it flowed into even her schedule in life. Everything became so efficient for her. And the husband was like, "Wow, I should probably do this minimalism thing too, so that we match." And she was like, "No, you do what you want to do. This is what I do to give me peace and take away my anxiety. But I mean, whatever you want to do, these are your spaces. You can do whatever you want with them." And that really impressed him. He's like, "Wow, I guess I have total freedom to do, but she experiences so many benefits. Maybe I'll try it." And so that's really the big thing to consider is, hey, take control of a few spaces that are agreed upon. These are my spaces. These are your spaces. You can do whatever you want with yours. I'll do whatever I want with mine. And I'm not trying to like separate, you know, families and like, hey, this is my space. No one's allowed. That's not the case. It's just, I'm responsible for the things in this space. So that's an idea. But realize you're fighting against, if anybody's trying to, convince someone to embrace minimalism, know that you are fighting against like everything in our society. It is a consumer culture. Our nation thrives when people buy things, and minimalism does not help that happen. And so for that reason, it's a little tough, but you can do it by taking charge of your space. And not the real impact that Marie Kondo says is, don't force other people to do it. She tried that herself when she was living in her family. She's from Japan, and she had a very traditional family, and she started getting rid of things that she thought her family didn't need, and it caused a lot of pain in the family. So just get rid of your things that you don't want, that belong to you, and don't worry about other people, but rather prioritize your own mental health, and lots of times that will be contagious for others.
I can see that. So like your friend's wife, she kind of put some good energy out there towards her husband because of what she's doing and how that affected her mental health, making her happier. And he liked the idea of it.
Yeah, it just like drew him in. He's like, wow. And he didn't feel like she was nagging him. He didn't feel like she was, you know, forcing him to do anything he didn't want to do. He naturally, by the way, if any of you ever become counselors, so I do a little bit of counseling as a chaplain. And one of the hardest things to do is to convince people to do things because they chose to do it. It's hard to like put things out there in such a way to where people will like come up with the idea that you're hoping they'll come up with. I'm not that good at it. The psychotherapist here we have on base, fantastic for that. But that's another mental health thing that minimalism can help with. And I guess we got one more segment, or unless you want to talk about warfighting now.
Yeah, let's just jump right into it. So what is the warfighter application for minimalism?
Okay, so some of these are a stretch. Some of them are really close, though, to reality. Like, for example, what if you were, I don't know, what if you're going to war? What if all of a sudden a war happens with something or some big mission happens and you're told, hey, you have to be ready to depart in 96 hours, get all of your affairs in order. Would that devastate you? Because that's, by the way, that by order, that's what we're supposed to be required to do, as best as I can understand it. We have to be ready to leave in 96 hours.
I could see that would be hard for a lot of people, especially if they have a lot going on or a lot of things.
Yeah, a ton of stuff. But imagine if you have only hold on to things that you really love, you know where everything is, like you have this lightweight thing, and you've organized your life. Like, you know who you're going to give power of attorney to help organize your stuff, or this or that or the other. Like, those are really great things that will take away stress from people who are warfighting on the field. So, because you don't want to be worried about your baseball collection, your baseball, like, card collection when you're off in some obscure region of the world, you know, completing the mission. But also, organization itself dovetails perfectly with warfighting. Being organized, this is one of the rules, by the way. If you do any like YouTube like search on the best parts of minimalism, this will come up. Everything has a home. And the idea is, if you have something in your house that's like, we call it gear adrift in the military, but if something doesn't have a home, why doesn't it have a home? Why is this not important enough to have like a place in it in the house for it, or a drawer or a place it's supposed to go? Maybe it's not that important. Maybe I should get rid of it. Or maybe it is important and I'm going to find a place for it. And now I've got a place for it and it's always the same place. I know people who are listening right now who hear this are going to think, this poor chaps, how did he ever live? But I used to lose my wallet and keys all the time in high school, all the time. And the reason is because I never put them in the same place. Never, never. And then all of a sudden I start putting my keys and wallet in the exact same spot every day when I get home. And guess what? They're always there. Always. And warfighting equipment is the same way. You want to know where all of your supplies are, all of your materials are at all times. Also, ostensibly, minimalism, we talked about the mental health benefits, clarity. Mental clarity creates focus, which directly corresponds to warfighting, doing the task at hand, making sure you're more efficient. You know, the people, you never ever heard of that 20-80 rule, 20% of the people do 80% of the work. Those people are the focused people, and they're usually organized. Be one of those people. Also, this is kind of tangentially related to military, financial stewardship. Fighting against that consumer culture is a pretty extraordinary thing. It like only using the things that you need eliminates a culture of waste. And by the way, we all waste stuff here in the military. And unfortunately, that's not very fair to the people back home paying taxes to support what we do here. And so being good financial stewards of what we have is a really glorious thing. Sorry, it's Halloween. I said glorious thing. You know, the United States Marine Corps really prides itself in doing more with less. They have the smallest budget in the DOD, and they have lots of really, really old equipment, and they somehow manage to accomplish their mission, even though their budget is just a fraction of what even a similarly sized unit within the Army spends on similar newer things. And so you take your pride in those sorts of things, and that really, like, you become a master of it. You learn what this can be used for. You learn how to fix it, how to maintain it. And then finally, minimalism comes with a preference for people and experiences over possessions. And I think this is really important for the mental health of the warfighter, because when you're deployed, you don't have all your possessions with you, right? You just have people and you have the experience itself. And minimalism intrinsically teaches you to prefer people and experiences. So instead of buying the new thing for my wife and I that are going to do this now, this new hobby or whatever, now we're going to invest whatever money would have spent in that in a, you know, like in a trip somewhere, a weekend trip to such and such place, or, you know, doing these things. And you make memories, and memories don't take any weight in your house, which is a really nice way to say it. There's tons of more things. There's obviously the books by Marie Kondo, tons of great minimalism blogs out there. You can definitely go too far, but that's just in a nutshell, part two for the minimalism series here at AFN.
Thank you so much for that, sir.
Yeah, thanks, brother. Take care.
You too. And stay tuned for some more music coming up next, and your news and radio.